So when the state of Utah approached you about working with the brine shrimp, were they having problems, or what did they need?
Those were in the days where there were there were very few regulations on the harvesting industry. There were threatened lawsuits at that time. I'm sure you're aware of this, that conservation groups were claiming that the industry was over-harvesting the shrimp and that the state needed to impose stricter oversight of what was going on. And so that's when they came to me and said, can you help out with this? Those were the, as we call them, the Wild West years of the project.
So how did you approach that problem then, or that issue?
Well, the first thing we had to do was figure out what we knew about the lake. And that was the most striking thing, I thought, because here's this lake, this phenomenal natural resource, fourth largest hypersaline lake in the world. And when it came down to it, we knew absolutely nothing. You know, there was a study here, a study there. The best data we had was Doyle Stevens' work from the 1970s. But we had, you know, I mean, we had published data. This is gives you some idea of what we had to work with. We had actually found one paper where the shrimp sample from the Great Salt Lake was to throw a bucket off of the pier at Salt Air, pull the bucket up, and count the number of shrimp in the bucket. That's what we had. You know, we had better studies with Doyle's work in the 70s than that. But there was no systematic collection of data, nothing on which we could start to build resource management type of perspective. And so that was the most shocking thing. So I spent some time early on trying to assemble all this data, and there wasn't much there. And then I tried to hypothesize some models on how the lake might be working given that data, but of course there was no way you could have any certainty on what you were shooting in the dark, essentially. And then we sat down and we had a whole bunch of brainstorm meetings. Most of these took place out at Antelope Island at that time. Well, the first ones were in Ogden at the regional office up there, and then we moved them out to Antelope Island. And we had these brainstorm meetings where we would just sit there and we'd just throw ideas around. Is this worth looking at? Could this be important? That's how we went through this.
What people were involved in?
Well, we had Don meetings. Archer from UDWR. You had Clay Pershawn from DWR. We had a couple of the old-time shrimp industry people that were involved. Don Paul was involved. Paul Birdsey was involved a little later. Trying to think who else was. Doyle was involved. Trying to remember who else was in that original set of groups.
Well, that sounds like a pretty broad group of people. So
we had some other DWR people that are since retired as well that would occasionally sit in on these meetings.
Yeah. So did this whole concept of trying to come up with maybe a formula or something, did that concern the industry?
Yeah. It wasn't necessarily a popular idea at that time.
Yeah.
And
but they were willing to sit down and participate.
They were giving us insights into things and said, oh, no, that can't be the case. And I mean, they basically argued that there was no way that they could ever over-harvest, etc. And so we put together and said that we weren't going to be able to go forward without a good set of data. And so we started putting together research questions and what needed to be collected to start to answer some of these questions. And I mean, a lot of the questions we came up with, now you look back in retrospect and say, boy, how could we have been so silly to have said that? But we had nothing to build upon. Like I said, we were shooting in the dark at that stage. And so, you know, simple questions like, how important, if nutrients are limiting the growth of the phytoplankton in the lake, are the nutrients coming from cycling within the lake? So the lake is an internal self-contained system. Or are those nutrients coming in annually with the runoff? Now, obviously, the runoff is bringing stuff in. But the big question is the overwhelming amount of nutrients already there? And so it's just a progressive accumulation over time from the runoff. But in any one year, it's really what's already there. Or is it what's coming in every year? We had no idea. Had no idea. We had no idea as to... You know, we had questions at that time. We had shrimp fishermen saying the reason why the shrimp numbers were going down on the lake was because the crickets were eating everything. We had other people on the lake saying that, the shrimp numbers were not going down, or the cyst numbers were not going down per se, but they weren't floating anymore, so they were all sinking to the bottom. And so these were all of these sorts of things that had to be answered. And, you know, one harvester might tell us that he could prove that you could over-harvest the shrimp because they had done it in some pond in Brazil, let's say. And somebody else would say, no, you can't do it. And so I'd have to be talking to the shrimp fisherman. And so the shrimp fisherman who said that you couldn't over-harvest them would call me. I would say, well, that's possible. But I don't have any proof of that. And then his response would be, so you're calling me a liar? And I say, no, I'm not calling you a liar. But your buddy over there says they can be. And, you know, and I was in meetings where, you know, a shrimp fisherman would then come running at me, threatening to beat me up. And, you know, two game wardens would come out of the side.
Oh, seriously? You're physically threatened?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
One night early on when we were doing this and discussing things with the shrimp fishermen in an open forum like this, when we got done, it was supposed to come up during the day. I drove down from Utah State, and we got to about 4 or 5 in the afternoon, and Don Archer said to me, oh, we're not going to get to it. Go on home, have dinner and everything. Well, I got home, back to Logan, phone rang at 8 o'clock, and he says, we're on the agenda for 11 o'clock tonight or something. I jumped back in my car, drove back down here, gave this talk about what we know and what we don't know, what we're thinking and what we're not thinking about. And this one shrimp fisherman comes barreling towards the podium that I'm standing at, ready to pound me. And, you know, two game wardens come out on either side of me. And then when we got done at the end of the night, Don Archer made sure that one of the game wardens escorted me out to my car to make sure I got on the road okay, you know, and somebody wasn't out there to beat me up, you know. And I didn't call anybody anything, but, you know, this was the sort of tension that was going on at this time. So those were the Wild West days that we refer to, and I mean, I was offered a bribe by one fisherman in those early days, you know, saying, well, what do you need? Would you need a new pickup truck? You know, this is what we'd like to see, you know, or something like this. Yeah. And these aren't the guys we're working with now. Those were the individual family-run businesses and that. Those guys are all gone now. The people around now are industry-type people. And I said to him, I remember it was Easter Sunday night. He called me and he said this to me. And my comment was, you know, if I were to do this, it would have to be for a whole lot more than a pickup truck because my career would be over with, I said, you know. I said, you know, like enough money for me to retire at Rio de Janeiro or something like this. And he couldn't understand this. And The next morning, I called UDWR immediately, called Don Archer up, and I said, "Don, I think I was offered a bribe last night. This is what went on." And he said, "Yes, you were offered a bribe." And I said, "You know, I just wanted to let you know because I don't want anyone to think that I'm involved in any way." Well, it was a good thing because within 3 days, all of a sudden, somebody at the Audubon Society called up here and said that I had taken the bribe.
Oh, really?
Because, you know,
sure.
It was a way of trying to do in everything, and Don could then say immediately no. He turned the person in and talked to him.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, those were the Wild West days.